Hello, and welcome back to another segment of Blank Scenario. I, as always, am your host, Marie, and this episode, we're going to be covering three more monsters from the Monster Manual that I think are underused and have a couple of fun ideas they can be used with. We are still working our way through the Monster Manual A to Z, and this episode, we actually are combining two letters because, believe it or not, there's only three monsters for these two letters total. So we are doing the letter I and J this episode. And I'm very excited for this first one because it's one of my favorites. And if you are not aware, it is actually featured in the D&D movie that just came out. Woot woot. So jumping into it, our first monster is the Intellect Devourer. Now, if you've seen the trailers for D&D movie, even if you haven't seen the movie itself, they do feature in that. In that the joke of it is these creatures live in the Underdark. They consume creatures that have sentient thoughts, so higher intelligence more likely are to be attacked. In the trailer, of course, everyone hides up against the wall and the creatures walk past. And the joke is, haha, they're so stupid. It's legitimately a clever moment in the film, and it is kind of funny because you have Chris Pines as the bard saying, well, that was insulting. But these creatures have a lot more to them than just living in the Underdark and eating brains. First of all, to clarify size, these things are considered tiny. The movie made them fairly decent-sized creature, but these things are not that big because they are essentially a walking brain with bestial clawed legs. The look of the movie is pretty accurate, so if you haven't seen that, you can look at the clip or just Google them. They're not super elaborate creatures as far as design goes. But they are small enough to fit inside a human brain. They feed on intelligent creatures. Then they actually can detect creatures with an intelligence of 3 and above. So you now have an official level of what sentience is in D&D, I guess. And unless you are hidden somehow, they are able to sense you and track you down. Not easy to hide from. They were originally created by the Mind Flayers, though, which is what's really interesting. They are created through a ritual process that is performed on the brain of a Mind Flayer thrall. Now, in this process, the brain becomes a self-entity, pops out, and is basically subservient to the Mind Flayers. They are able to consume a creature's mind and memories in such a way that they are able to use a body as a puppet to lure people back to the Mind Flayer's domain. So they basically completely take over the body. So much so that it appears as if the person is still there because they have the memories of this person. And this creates a really interesting dynamic because you can be interacting with someone who seems off but knows who you are still. Including, they know all the spells this person knew and all the languages. So while they are not inherently spellcasters, they do know the spells this person used and they have their own intelligence, wisdom, and charisma stats. You're looking at a creature that might now be able to cast spells. And depending upon how many people this Intellect Devourer has eaten, it might know a lot of spells. There are a couple ways that you can get rid of them. Specifically, they are kicked out of the host body if the host body dies. If a protection from good and evil is cast on the body, so they are an evil creature that basically removes them from the body. Or if a wish spell is used to restore a creature's brain. Something to note is that the body will die completely if you don't restore the person's brain within one round, which in D&D terms is 6 seconds. If you're going to try to save someone who's been taken over by an Intellect Devourer, you need to have a wish spell on hand or they're not coming back. So they are a very fun creature. They're great for paranoia as well, which is what a lot of stuff is going to be going on with this episode. Our first scenario is one that I want to run at some point. I'm still writing out the scenario for it because it's a creature that's been on my mind to use for a while. Your party comes across a town or is from a town that is nearby a supposedly haunted forest. Whatever lore or legend you want to connect to it, this forest is bad news. When suddenly it seems like there's a rise in violent attacks and missing people. People are not acting normal. They're kind of acting out a little bit, getting violent for some reason. In my head, the way I had this was actually a town of traditionally monstrous races that seemingly are going feral. So kind of a Zootopia approach a little bit. In the process of this, your party can discover Intellect Devourers have moved in, which means there is an Underdark tunnel somewhere that no one knew about. You can basically be trying to deal with these Intellect Devourers that are acting like your friends or acting like the townsfolk that you wouldn't normally attack, while also having to figure out where are they coming from and how we block them off. Another option is actually when you can use your parties in the Underdark. This is much more of if they have been in the Underdark for a reason, I think you could use this. But they have met an old friend or someone they know they have come across, right? What are the odds? And this person supposedly knows a way out. Well, as you can guess, they're leading them to the Mind Flayers. Now, your party might want to be going that direction. Maybe this is fortuitous. They think, oh, we can use this. Maybe they have no idea and it's a complete ambush. Either way, your party is going to find out that the person who used to be a friend no longer exists and is being used by a intellect devourer. That is two options for that creature, which is, again, a very fun creature to use for paranoia. Our next monster is an invisible stalker. I actually had one of these in a game I was playing in, and they are a pain to fight. But an invisible stalker is essentially an air elemental that in the 5e lore, it has been summoned and transformed by magic. It has two things it can do. It can hunt down creatures to bring them back or kill them, whichever one, or it can retrieve objects for you. That is it. That is all it can do. If you give it a task that doesn't involve either of those two things, the magic that has summoned it here and transformed it ends, and it is released immediately. And, best part, it is an unwilling servant at best, and will often try to subvert and adjust commands you give it. So you need to be careful what you tell it to do, because if you accidentally release it, it's going to be mad at you. It doesn't just immediately go home. It just is released from the spell, and now is just a random air elemental that's in your house. Because it is made out of air, it is invisible, so you cannot see it at any point. And even if you use a True Sight or IC invisibility spell, which you can get in D&D depending on your level, you only see a vague outline. So there's no specific shape for this thing. It's not necessarily, well, someone's invisible and they're flying. No, it's literally air is all you're fighting. But it's sentient and it has claws. When it is given a target, whether to kill, recover, whatever it is, it knows both where its target is and where its summoner is at all times. So it has seemingly omnipotent knowledge of what it's supposed to be doing. And it can travel long distances, even though it hates doing prolonged commands. One variant twist in 3.5 that you could use is that it is actually a specific creature from the elemental plane of air. It's not just an air elemental, it's a specific type of elemental. And it can carry out any task. As long as it is worded correctly, and you don't give a task that's too long because then it gets bored and tries to change it. Similarly, you don't want to make it too mad at you, but you get a bit more room to make it useful in 3.5. So a couple of scenario ideas for this one is that your party member is being hunted by a stalker. You might go, well, obviously, because that's his job. Yes. However, this stalker is taking his time taking you back. It's not tearing you to pieces and bringing your body back. It's slowly dragging you. And the party is able to keep pace. If you have anyone in your party that can do a comprehend languages or a tongue spell or just speaks, I think Aaron is the language of the elemental plane of air, you can talk to it and it will tell you, I'm bringing this person back, but I want you to kill the person so I can be free. So it's dragging its feet in the hopes that you will be able to free it. This may or may not gain you favors with it. It is just a random air elemental. They are typically not good, but they're not inherently evil either. So it's not going to immediately attack you. And your party might even know that, like, well, if we free it, it'll attack the summoner, not us, which is probably good for us, right? Another option for the invisible stalker is that your party is being sent ahead of it to retrieve someone. Now, I would give them specific stakes as to you need to bring this person back. And you can determine why based upon your party's alignment. Maybe it is someone who owes a debt and your party's evil and is bounty hunters. Maybe your party's trying to get an evil person back that they let free, whatever it is. And your party has a 3-day head start. If they don't bring the person back, an invisible stalker is released to bring the person back instead. And if the stalker brings them back, your party will face consequences. Again, make the stakes high enough that your party does not want this to happen. Because what this will do is either they have to avoid the stalker, even though it knows exactly where they are at all times, or they have to defeat it, which is very, very difficult to do. Or they have to get back in time. And you can make it to where 3 days is not enough time by default. They're going to have to deal with it. So your party will be gearing up for a fight, knowing what's coming, but not really having a solid plan on what to do about it, possibly. And our last one is another kind of subterfuge one. Your party is dealing with a ghost that has been attacking nearby town. It's coming in, randomly killing people. No one knows what's going on. The clerics can't do anything to stop it. They're all kind of in confusion. And what's happening is this town is in conflict with the landowner, with the local lord, whoever you want it to be, who is sending a invisible stalker to attack key people in this town. I would make this very direct as to who is being targeted as far as to why they're being targeted. But I would make it a little bit iffy as to what's happening. It could be, you know, maybe it's a magical effect that this person is doing. Maybe it's poisoning. There could be a lot of things. Maybe animals are being sent. So the stalker may not be their first thought, but eventually they will figure it out. And I would leave enough clues somewhere for them to find it. And our last monster is the only monster in the J section of the monster manual, weirdly enough. And that is the Jackalware. Now, you might be thinking, oh, it's a person that turns into a jackal. No. It is a jackal that turns into a person. And I am aware it's a very vague difference, but bear with me on this. A were-person is someone that is cursed or blessed or whatever it is to turn into an animal or an animal hybrid. Usually evil intent, like a werewolf. You do have were-bears that are actually good creatures. But either way, you have a person that's cursed to turn into an animal. A jackalware is a were-animal, I guess is a better term, because I can turn into a person. So the reason for this is a jackalware came about because jackals were tainted by demonic powers in order to serve Lamias. Now, just so you know, a Lamia is kind of like a Sphinx, but it is evil. And they basically serve a demon lord named Grast, who we kind of talked about, I think, in one of the chapters on the Cambians. They are basically demonically changed jackals that were given the ability to turn to humans or a jackal-human hybrid in order to serve the Lami masters or just their demon lord. So these guys are evil. They were given a couple other features, though, when they were transformed. They are able to use a sleep gaze that allows them to capture humanoids, either to turn to slaves or to be killed by their masters, obviously to no good intention. And kind of like the Harveys from last episode, they are cowards. They fight as a pack. Now, they are not quite as bad as Harveys are because they do have a directive they follow. So they will actually try to engage in combat. Normally, they fight alongside actual jackals that are just basically following orders. Because a jackalware is part jackal, these animals will follow them with no problems. So if you take out the jackalware, the animals should fall out of line pretty quickly. They're fairly weak on their own, so they're pretty easy to fight aside from the sleep gaze. The interesting thing is when they shapeshift, they have their three forms. They have a true jackal form, so they are an animal that has gained sentience. They have a human hybrid form, which essentially looks like a jackal standing upright with a kind of humanoid torso. It's a typical were-creature look. It's not anything super unique. But when they are human, they look like a very gaunt human. So they are not shapeshifting into a run-of-the-mill person. They look awful. So it's going to be really obvious that something is wrong with this person when you see them. And this is probably my favorite thing about them, to be honest, out of everything else. They cannot tell the truth. If they try to tell the truth, they are in physical discomfort, and it shows. They have to lie. And you will notice, it says in the Monster Manual, perceptive creatures might notice it wincing in pain when it speaks the truth. So they are not subtle in any way. They have no major negative stats, but no positive stats either, so not super charming. So it's not like, oh, you can play it off. No, they can't play it off. It's really obvious that they're in pain if they tell the truth, which is really great if you have a cleric that decides to cast a zone of truth on them. Now, in some of the earlier editions, they actually were not made by a demon lord, but rather by a trickster entity, not necessarily a god, as far as I could tell. They weren't any of my earlier books. I had to Google this. But they were created by a trickster deity or were left over from a race of creatures that were kind of changed and now serve their own goals. So there is a little bit of independence you can pull into them. But for the most part, with 5e, they're going to be connected to the demon lords. So I've got a few ideas on how to use these guys. The first is, again, subterfuge. During a full moon, there are several houses that are attacked in a small town. Now, again, players could be from this town or traveling through either way. But this leads to a witch hunt because all of a sudden I wasn't worried about werewolves. Because full moon, what else could it be? Over the course of the next few days, people start disappearing. The town might claim, oh, they're running away because it's them, where in actuality, the Jackalwars are taking advantage of the chaos that they cause because they can shapeshift, remember? So they can create the illusion of werewolves just by changing from their form into human and back again. And they are taking people and using it as a cover of, oh, no, they were probably a werewolf this entire time, and they now have humans they can take back. Especially if you have players that are familiar with werecreatures, they might notice subtle things that don't quite line up with werewolves or with werebears or with whatever it is. Or, even better, you could have a werewolf in the party who says, no, that wasn't a full moon. It did happen. That can't be werewolf attack. So you could really kind of play up the idea of a witch hunt within a town of these creatures are coming after us. What do we do when it's actually these jackalwares the entire time? Another scenario option is that you have a jackal that is actually acting independently. So it's not serving any specific Lamia or demon lord at the time. It's just kind of doing its own thing. And it is basically negotiating deals for when the demon lords. Now, it doesn't really have to directly connect to the demon lord for this to happen. It could just be making deals because it wants to, and it causes, you know, a lot of evil, which is always a good thing for these guys. But your party will find out about this and has to figure out how to get out of this deal, because if you make a deal with the demon, they are lawful evil. So yes, the deal is bad, but it is ironclad. You're not getting out of this. So your party needs to either figure out a way out for their own souls or the souls of the person they know who made the deal. And remember, jackalwares lie and do not like telling the truth. So it's really easy to figure out what's going on with them. It's going to try to cover its tracks. It's going to try to be deceitful. But your party will probably quickly figure out, you know, when it tells the truth, it doesn't really look super happy. So maybe that's our sign we need to look for. And you can make the deal fairly simple to get out of as well. I don't think for that we need to make it a huge issue of you have to go on a quest. I think you just need to be able to find a loophole and convince the jackalwar to keep talking long enough to find that loophole. And our last scenario for these guys is your party is actually following a jackalwar. Now, again, they serve the Lamias that are usually found in deserts or other abandoned places. And these guys not only love to have slaves, they love treasure. So obviously they need people to clean stuff, right? So your party is actually following a jackalwar back to the slayer. They could be retrieving a specific treasure. Maybe a relic was taken. Maybe someone was captured they're trying to save. Or they could even just be going on a treasure hunt because, hey, this guy has a lot of gold he's carrying. He's going somewhere with it. Let's see where it is. The downside is your party is going to enemy territory, where they will deal with not only with the Lamia or whoever the lord is that the jackalwar serves, they have to deal with multiple jackalwares who can put them to sleep and capture them, and also manage to get out without losing anything. That's going to be interesting because your party is willingly putting themselves in danger for something they hope is worth it, and it may or may not be. That is going to be it for this episode. We have the Intellect Devourer, the Invisible Stalker, and the Jackalwares. Which, honestly, jackalwares are probably the ones I think are most fun. As much as I love Intellect Devourers, I think jackalwares would be interesting because you could really throw a party off on what is going on. Because they're expecting a human to transform. They're not expecting an animal to transform. So you can really play it up a little bit that way. Let me know how you would use these creatures. If you do something different. If you would give anyone a specific task or goal they're looking for. Also, how cruel would you be with the Intellect Devourer on who is taking? Because I can definitely see that taking a dark turn if you took someone very important to one of the players. But let me know what you do with these. Let me know what monster you want me to cover next. I'm getting close about halfway through the monster manual, so we're coming up on some big names. So let me know if you want me to cover those or if you have any ideas you want me to talk about. And I will see you next time.
Hello! Bob Spuds here on the scene once again, reporting for Potato Candy Network. Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. If you have a scenario prompt you want us to use, send it to us on social networking with Instagram and Facebook at Potato Candy Network. And if you really liked us, consider supporting us on Patreon for bonus content monthly, such as behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, inspirations, and future episode previews. Check out our brother show, Dreadful Tales, for some top-tension, full, truly terrifying tales of terror. Got that on the first try, you know. And finally, please leave us a review, as it helps your recommendations and helps others find the hard work we do here at Potato Candy Network. Oh, and friendly reminder, if someone asks you if you're a god, don't think of marshmallows. Nobody likes that guy.